So some of the hardest things that we ever go through aren't usually things that are happening to us, right? They're the moments when someone you love is facing something hard and we can't face it for them. Do you identify with that? You can be there by their side before, during, and after the thing. You can be a source of encouragement and truth and reminding them of what's true. You can express your love and support. But as much as you may want to take from them what is difficult, you yourself cannot walk that road for them. So those moments when you as a parent watch your child leave your home on the first day of school, on the first day of having their driver's license, I already don't look forward to that day, and mine's only one, all right? And then when they went away to college or they moved out and got their own place, you know what they're going to be facing. You know the pressures. You know the hardships. You've learned over time how to manage them, but you know what they're going to face, and you know it's going to be difficult, and you'd love to carry it for them. It's those moments when you stand behind a very good friend before they have to walk into a difficult conversation, whether that's in the courtroom, in their marriage, at their workplace. Or it's those moments when we as a church pray over someone who's being sent into a place where they will have to stand alone. I'm thinking of Hannah this morning. She's not alone, but she moved to a place where she didn't know many people. She's to work for the gospel. That could be the mission field, or it could simply be our own neighborhoods, our own homes. Because some of us walk into a home where God is not the king of everyone in that home, right? It's in those moments that we begin to realize just how limited our words can feel. We've been in that situation as a church this week. We can't carry the grief or the disappointment or the heaviness that has been given to other people, but we can support. We can be a listening ear. We can encourage and stand by for whatever it is that we can do to help. But what do you say? What do you say when you can't control what happens next? The psalm we're looking at today, Psalm 20, gives us an example of what we can say in those moments. What we're about to read are words of a people that are standing beside their king as he readies himself for battle. The people cannot fight the battle for the king. They can't promise him an easy road ahead. They can't guarantee what the outcome will be. But what they can do is remind him and remind themselves where their help comes from. And it's an example for us to shape our own conversations when we find ourselves staring at difficult things, to help us with what to say, with what to pray, with what to do when the difficult road is ours to walk, and what we ought to expect from our brothers and sisters of faith when we have to go that road ourselves. Psalm 20, verses 1 through 5 say, "May the Lord answer you in a day of trouble. May the name of Jacob's God protect you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and sustain you from Zion. May he remember all your offerings and accept your burnt offering. May he give you what your heart desires and fulfill your whole purpose. Let us shout for joy at your victory and lift the banner of your name in the name of our God. May the Lord fulfill all your requests." Now, what we figure out in verse 5, when you're reading through this for the first time, or, you know, first time this year if you follow a psalm plan, what you realize in Psalm or in verse 5 is that it says, "Let us." That means that David is not speaking here, right? David, to my knowledge, David doesn't have split personalities, right? So let us, it's the people talking. It's not David himself as the main voice. It's the people under David's kingship. So to add clarity, we could read this, "May the Lord answer David in the day of trouble." What are the people doing when they say these things? Tell me, what are the people doing? They're lifting him up. They're encouraging him. Yes. What else are they doing? They're blessing him. Right? They're praying for, they're interceding for him. It doesn't necessarily look like, God, we ask you to empower David, our king. It looks like the people standing face to face with David and in unison even. I don't know what this picture looked like. The Bible isn't clear on that. But looking him in the eyes and saying, may the Lord our God protect you. May the Lord our God give you the desires of your heart. May God answer you, David, in your day of trouble. May God send you, David, help from Zion. May God remember your offerings, David. May God give you, David, what your heart desires and fulfill your whole purpose. That kind of speech has a certain power in that, doesn't it? Think about that. If we as a church, when you are facing one of the difficult things in your life, imagine if there was a time and a place where we got together and we surrounded you and we said, may the Lord answer the cries of your heart as you are brokenhearted. May the Lord bless you and keep you and strengthen you to raise you up like on eagle's wings, right? May the Lord be your refuge and strength. There is a power in that if we believe that, right? If we're sincere in that, to have other people come around you and say these things is an uplifting, beautiful, strengthening thing. It is a blessing. What's the opposite of a blessing? Are we better at blessing or cursing? Duh, right? We are so quick to judgment. We are so quick to criticism. We are so quick to say, well, I wouldn't do it that way. The difference between a blessing and a curse is you're speaking life or you're speaking death into something. You hear me on that? When the people bless David, they're speaking life over him. Now, hear me on this. I am not in the name it and claim it crowd, if you know what that is. I am not one that says, hey, we just need to speak this into existence, right? Like, in God's name, this is going to happen. In God's name, we're going to have $750,000 so we can buy a school, right? Like, I would have been having you. If I thought that, you guys have been praying that for weeks now, all right? I'm not in that crowd. But these are not things that are isolated here. These are not things that these people are creating. Not only that, they're saying, may God, may it be the will of God that he fulfills his promises for his people. Where do you get those promises from? Him, right? He's given them to his people. They're just repeating them back. And see, so what they're saying, this speech has power in it. This is support. This is life-giving. While it cannot erase the trouble that's in front of David, it's not going to fix that. It's not going to make it go away, because that's what we want, right? We want, when we pray, oftentimes we want God to remove the circumstance. We want him to remove the obstacle. We want him to make it comfortable. We want him to make it easy. We want him to make all these things happen. We don't pray for the strength to face the hard thing, honestly. At least I don't. And I don't hear that prayer very often. It's, God, take care of this. Not, God, I know that you have purposed it for me to go through this. So give me the wisdom, the strength, the courage, whatever it might be to walk through this, because I know you are with me even in the valley of the shadow of death, right? He says, may God... Sorry, I skipped a whole thing. Let me go back. There is a certain power, a certain support. It can't erase the trouble that he is going to have to face. But there is power in hearing that, feeling that, and remembering that in times of trouble. Why? I think it boils down to this, because you are not alone. You're seen. Talking with Heather over after our last night of VBS, we had one kid that was hiding behind here, didn't want to go home. I saw him and I walked over to him, like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't want to leave. And I was like, that can make my ego blow up, right? Like that, oh man. But it was so sweet. I was just a helper, but like, oh, it felt good. And then yeah, we had a young girl over here that was just in tears, you know. And one of the things that Heather said that I didn't consider was, I think she felt seen, and she didn't want to leave that. And one of the most troubling things for the soul is the belief that whatever we have to go through, we're going to have to go through it alone. That no one sees, that no one cares the struggle that you're going through, that no one cares the amount of work that you're putting in, no one cares about the effort that you have been putting, they just want you to do more, right? Do you resonate with that? So it's been established that one of the greatest things that is affecting people today is that they feel like they have no one to share the load with, that they're lonely, that nobody cares what they have to say. And because faith has been turned into such a private, personal thing, we might often say that we're praying for someone, but we rarely bless someone with that kind of prayer. Sometimes, something that I'm continuously reminded of is how much Christine's support matters to me. I was trying to score brownie points today as she went downstairs. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. You know me better than that. But I'm continuously reminded of how much her support matters, because when we're having those days that happen in marriage, when we're not like on the same page, like, it sucks the motivation out of me. I don't have as much strength to face the hard things. It doesn't mean that I don't do it, but feeling like my favorite person is behind me, cheering me on, is there to help support me when I'm feeling completely zapped, that is a difference maker for me. And a similar thing that happened this week with the ministry that we did this week. The only reason that we could feed 80 people who lost a giant of faith, the only reason that we could build relationships with 19 kids this week is because people are standing behind. Does that make sense? Because people are in support. And that was especially true for the VBS volunteers that showed up right after work. Seeing them walk through these doors with smiles on their faces after they just work 8, 10, 12 hours. And they're here and they're hungry, but they're ready to serve, right? Seeing them walk through the doors with a smile on their faces, seeing them get excited to hang out with these kids that they might possibly never see again, just to share the love of Christ with them, was invigorating, not just to me, but to one another. Yes, we want kids to know, love, and serve Jesus, but the secondary effect of taking on that responsibility, the secondary effect of making that commitment and that sacrifice, is that we got closer. That we went to battle together, right? And we struggled together for the gospel. In this heartfelt blessing, these people under David's leadership couldn't fight the battle for him, but they could deeply care about what he was about to face and sincerely petition the Lord on his behalf. They may have felt hopeless. They may have wished that they could have done more, but they did the job that God had given them to do. They called on the Lord on David's behalf. Notice what they were united around. They weren't united around David himself, but the Lord's plans for what David would be facing. Because what we read in verse 5, it's clear that the people understood that David's victory in battle was also their victory. As the leader goes, so goes the nation. Yet even, this is bigger than that. It's not just David's victory is the nation's victory, it's God's victory. Because he's the one that's going to make it happen, right? Let us shout for joy at your victory and lift the banner in the name of our God. Not lift the banner of Israel, not lift the banner of David, but lift the banner of the Lord our God. What a eternal perspective to have, right? Like I've said for a long time, I don't want to lift the banner of Rising Church. I want to lift the banner of the kingdom. It is His kingdom that we serve. It is not an organization. Yes, we have to do things to work on the organization and build that and all the things that we can do together. But it will never be about the legacy of Rising Church. It will always be about the legacy of God and His kingdom, right? So let's think about that, not on a national scale, not on an organizational scale, but on a personal level. We see people united around something and notice it's not, David, you've got this. You're so great. We know you can do it. Go get them, buddy, right? Because when you're facing something hard and someone comes along and says, you got this, it's almost equivalent to saying, I don't really care. Isn't that true? I'm glad you have confidence in me, but right now I don't have confidence in me. Does that make sense? Like, I need something beyond you. I need something beyond me. I need God to come into this situation. Don't tell me that you think I've got this when you're not carrying any of that load. And we see people looking at this. Maybe they say this, and you might not be then the encourager, optimistic. You got this. Maybe you're in the camp of, well, David, you're the king. It's your job. Now go do your job. Right? Like, because that's the other end of the spectrum. You signed up for this. Actually, he didn't sign up for that. God picked him. Right? And so you can't have that perspective. You can't look at that because those statements are all too common in our hearts and in our homes. They both avoid taking responsibility that we see these people take. Husband, you're the provider. It's your job to provide. And that's not an uncommon line, especially in more conservative circles. It's the line that a husband might repeat to himself, putting incredible pressure on himself. And the spouse may add weight to that, unknowingly, maybe ignorantly, or maybe purposefully. I don't know. But not sharing the burden in that. Or when you're trying to encourage a mom, a student, or even someone in our church, you're so good at this. You keep doing what you're doing. Meanwhile, they feel like they're drowning or failing even. That encouragement is often an avoidance of responsibility to jump in and help. And at best, it does not make people feel seen. So for instance, what might you change in your marriage if you decided not to criticize and instead opened your mouth in prayer to call on God for your spouse's blessing? What would it look like instead of under your breath saying, I wish you wouldn't do that, you said, Lord, I'm frustrated right now. But I love that person. I would like for you to change that habit in them. But use this to change me. Bless our marriage because I'm submitting this to you. Right? What would it look like that even though if you're angry at them, now I understand this, I've been in this situation of many times, but what would it look like if we actually didn't let the sun go down on our anger in our homes? You can pray through your teeth. You can grit it. No. Lord God, I love them. I don't really like them right now. But I know it's good for me and them and your kingdom if we come together right now and ask for your blessing in this, despite the fight, despite the argument, despite the challenge. You see how common and conventional wisdom and habits and instincts can serve to actually be a curse instead of a blessing in our lives, right? What might change in your friendships if when they express that they were facing a difficulty, and instead of judging whether or not it should be difficult for them, you dropped your opinion and put your hand on their shoulder and supported them by calling on the name of the Lord their God? What might change in our church even if we disagree with someone? Because how many of you disagree with somebody in here? Nobody's like, I don't want to say that. Trying to light a fire this morning, all right? Yeah. But even if you disagree with someone, what if we learned, you know, theological differences. Like, we've got a hodgepodge of folks in here. I learned not too long ago that, like, Bob was, he grew up in the charismatic church, right? And then we got folks over from Baptist churches that are like, don't move during worship, right? Like, and that's okay. That's just upbringing differences. That's okay. And we may disagree of what that looks like. I long for the day we see Bob dancing down through the aisles, don't you? It'd be awesome. But here's the thing. We may disagree on those things. We may disagree on lifestyle things, right? We might disagree with the choices that you're making in with your money, with your kids, with your marriage, with whatever the case may be. We may be like, you're not making some of the smartest choices, and, you know, whatever. We may disagree on those things. But what if we learned to pray with them and for them before we rushed to correct them or to back away from them? What would it look like to bless them rather than curse them? And what would it do for our lives if we had the courage, because it is fear that keeps us from these things, if we had the courage to step in where we know God has promised and bless one another, whatever relationship that we're in? I don't know if you can even imagine that, because, you know, some of you have never received that. But here's what I can tell you. You're not condoning their mistakes. Hear me on this. You're not condoning their mistakes. You're not participating, in their failures. You're not saying you agree with what you actually disagree on by blessing them and supporting them. Right? We got a big guilty by association problem in our culture right now. And that is making us tribal. It's making us divided. It's making, we're divided in every possible thing today, aren't we? By generations, by political party, by the music we listen to. I think it's okay if we're divided on Coke versus Pepsi, because Coke is the devil's water, all right? But here's the thing. We're divided on every single thing these days. In the church, God's grace unites, because we're all sinners. And none of us know the next step. We're all struggling to figure out what's next. We're all struggling to figure out what decision comes next. We've all experienced things in life to a different degree. Some of you have never been in a house without, toilets. All right? Some of you have. So some of you have been homeless. Some of you have been through really difficult things. You've overcome really serious addictions, and others of you have never had to battle with those things before. And so we all have a different level of endurance, a part of us. We have a different level of thick skin. We come through these things. And what if we didn't look at one another? And this is from, I'll just use a common term, the snowflake, right? What if the snowflakes didn't automatically think that people who are a little more gruff, a little more hardened because of life, weren't just out to get them and mean? And what if those experienced saints could look at the snowflakes and have mercy on them? Because that just hasn't been their path. And if we believe that God has set the steps before them, then that's the path that God has had them on. Right? So if you criticize their path, you're criticizing what God has ordained. What if we stood with them? What if we stood behind them, even when we're not physically present? What if you're showing them that their failure is not the whole story and your disagreement is not the deepest thing holding the relationship together? What if you're sharing the grace of God that has brought us all under the grace of Jesus, and trusting that God, not them, not you, but God will see them through to truth, to wisdom, to love? You give the gospel room to grow in them while you stand by them. Because look at David's response in verse 6. He says, now I know. Verses 1 through 5 was, may the Lord do this. May the Lord bless you, keep you. May the Lord fulfill the purposes and give you the desires of your hearts. May. Now David is piping in and he's saying, I've heard the blessing of God and the people. And now I know. Everybody say, now I know. That the Lord gives victory to His anointed. He will answer him from His holy heaven with mighty victories from His right hand. So the people prayed, may the Lord. And that blessing, at that blessing, David says, now I know. That's a significant change. Nothing about the battlefield has changed yet. David is still going to have to make decisions. He's still going to lead. He still has to walk through a situation where the outcome matters, and that right there is where fear will get a hold of us, isn't it? What if I make the wrong decision? What if I miss something? What if this costs me more than I thought it would? What if people are disappointed in me? High stakes moments can make us feel as though everything rests on us. But David's confidence is not that he suddenly knows exactly what to do. His confidence is that the outcome does not finally rest on him. The people have prayed to the Lord. David knows who gives the victory. David is still, though, responsible to obey. He must still lead faithfully, but David is not responsible for being God. Let me say that again. David is not responsible for being God. And I wonder how many of us are exhausted because somewhere along the way we started carrying responsibilities that God never actually gave to us. You're responsible to love and respect your spouse, but you're not responsible for controlling how your spouse responds. You are responsible to raise your children in the truth, but you're not responsible for making them believe. You are responsible to tell someone the truth in love, but you're not responsible for producing conviction in their heart. You are responsible to make the wisest decision you can with what God has given to you. But you are not responsible for guaranteeing the outcome. Church, you are responsible to obey. I take that as an amen. You are not responsible for making obedience work. And that is difficult for us because we want some control over what comes next, don't we? We want to know that if we say the right thing, then they'll respond the right way. If I parent correctly, my child will turn out correctly. If I make the faithful decision, nobody will leave. If I do what God asks, things will work out the way I hoped. But God never promised us control over outcomes. He calls us to faithfulness. And that's what David can know as he starts walking toward this battle. He doesn't suddenly know that every decision he's going to have to make. He doesn't know what moves his enemy is going to make. But David knows who saves. He says, now I know that the Lord gives victory to His anointed. David then can carry the responsibility of being king because he does not also have to carry the responsibility of being God. That is the byproduct then of being a blessing to people. God didn't reassure David. That came through God's people united around God on behalf of David. Even willing to accept the outcome, not as David's, but as God's outcome. If David lost the battle, then that responsibility wouldn't be on David, it would be on God, right? And that is a blessing that you can give when you are patient with someone else's sin. I know that sounds odd, but think about it. When you're patient with someone else's sin, when you're patient with their personality, when you're patient with their mess, this is a blessing that you can give in grace because, hear me on this, it is a blessing that you have received from God as He has been patient with your sin, as He has been patient with your personality, as He has been patient with your mess. And that patience from God has, in fact, allowed you space, the freedom to grow, right? That has allowed you the freedom to respond out of love to God instead of obligation. It is a unique blessing that's really only seen in God's kingdom. And we expect God to finish the work as we unload the responsibility of having to be God in our own lives. As we remember who saves, who gives the victory, who is the King of Kings, it reorients what we trust in. And take a look at this, because you see it happening in David. Psalm 27 through 8, some take pride in chariots and others in horses, but we take pride in the name of the Lord our God. They collapse and fall, but we rise and stand firm. Remember, David is preparing for battle. So here he says that chariots and horses that would be used for battle are not what he's going to trust in. He's not going to take pride in the quality or the quantity of his armaments. He's going to take pride in, he's going to march into the battle before him, trusting in the name of the Lord our God. Now that is easy to say, and it's like one of those things that we're like, yeah, that sounds good. That's cool. We can read that in Scripture. And I'm hot, so I'm moving my fan. Sorry. But it's easy for us to be, oh yeah, I agree with that. Okay, let's bring it down to your level. Because I don't know any of you that are gearing up for a war anytime soon, right? What do you need to make it through life this next week? What are you trusting in to make it through this next week? Is it your car? Is it your bank account? Is it someone that you know and love? What is it that you're trusting in to help you conquer sin? What is it that you're trusting in to keep temptation away from you? Because what do we say often? You made me mad. No. They can do things that are irritating, but you are in control of what's underneath your own skin. You can make decisions. You can set boundaries. You can do all of those things. You have to either confront it or forgive it. You might have to change your expectations. What are you taking pride in over your life? Notice that this is a confession. What he says here. David wants to be sure. What king, what battle leader wouldn't want to be sure of the outcome? And the way to be sure of the outcome in the worldly sense is to arm up, to have as many people, as many weapons, as much ammunition as possible, and that will hopefully guarantee the victory. David is still human. So he wants to trust in his chariots. He wants to trust in his horses. His heart is trying to drag him to trust in his weapons as he heads into battle. But here he says, I am resisting that urge. I am taking a stand against that because I have been reminded of what is true, is that the chariots don't save, the horses don't save, the Lord our God saves. Right? So he's going to march into battle, the battle before him, trusting in the name of the Lord our God. It's God who gives the victory. And so ultimately, David is saying this: I don't have to place my trust in the things that promise me control. We've all got our versions of horses and chariots. Sometimes it's having enough money in the bank or knowing exactly what everyone else is doing. Sometimes it's having the last word or keeping other people happy. Sometimes it's gathering one more piece of information before we make the decision. Sometimes it's making sure everyone around us behaves the way that we think they should. None of those things necessarily feel like trust. They feel more like responsibility or wisdom or being prepared. Those things, that's what we call them. But sometimes what we call responsibility is really our attempt to make sure we never have to depend on God. Let me say that again, because I don't know that you got it. Sometimes what we call responsibility is really our attempt to make sure we never have to depend on God. Because if I have every little detail figured out, if I have enough money in the bank, if I have enough people around me, then I don't ever have to cry out to the Lord our God. Because I will never be in need. And you know what that does? That limits the depth of the faith that you could have. That limits the closeness of relationship that you could have with God. This is where we get uncomfortable. Most of us aren't tempted to stop trusting God by announcing, I don't trust God anymore. We just start building little systems that make him unnecessary. If I get control of enough variables, then uncertainty isn't a part of my life any longer. If I can keep everyone happy, I won't have to face rejection. If I can make sure my kids make the right choices, I don't have to entrust them to God. If I can correct everyone around me, I don't have to wait on the Holy Spirit to do its work. If I can accumulate enough, prepare enough, know enough, plan enough, maybe I can make sure nothing happens that I can't handle. That's what horses and chariots do. Eventually, the things that God gave us to use become the things we look to for salvation. Eventually, the things God gave us to use become the things we look to for salvation. These horses, these chariots, they promise us control. But David, through the blessing of his people, has remembered something far better. It's the Lord that saves. It's the Lord that saves. And when he remembers that, all doubt is gone. And he declares this in verse 9. He says, Lord, give victory to the king. May he answer us on the day that we call. What's interesting about this psalm is that the battle never actually happens in this psalm. We never find out what the enemy does. We never hear David's strategy. We never see the chariots even move. We aren't told what the outcome of the battle is. Psalm 20 ends before any of that ever happens. It ends with people who have prayed, a king who remembers who saves, and a community declaring together where their trust belongs. And that's why we need to spend time in this psalm. Because most of the time, when we need faith the most, we don't know what's coming next. Sometimes when you're standing beside someone you love, wishing you could take the road from them, and you can't. You can't make the decision for them. You can't absorb all the grief that they have. You can't change their heart. You can't guarantee how things are going to turn out. But you are not powerless. Church, you are not powerless. You can stand with them. You can speak the truth of God over them. You can carry their name before the Lord. You can remind them of who saves when they are having trouble remembering it themselves. May the Lord answer you in a day of trouble. May the name of God's of Jacob's God protect you. May he send you help. May he sustain you. And sometimes that is one of the greatest gifts the people of God can give. And then sometimes in life, you're David. Sometimes you're David. Sometimes the battle is yours. You're the one that has to walk through the door. You're the one who has to make the decision. You're the one who has to have the conversation. You're the one who has to live with what you cannot control. And when that day comes, you do not have to be God. You don't have to be God. You are responsible to be faithful, to obey. Use whatever God has placed in your hands, but you do not have to make obedience work. You do not have to guarantee the outcome. You do not have to put your trust in every little thing that promises you control. Some trust in chariots, others trust in horses. We will use what God gives us and we'll prepare. We'll think, we'll work, we'll make the wisest decisions that we know how to make. But those things are not our Savior. We take pride in the name of the Lord our God. So whether today you are standing beside someone that's headed into a battle, or whether you are the one taking the next step toward us, Psalm gives us something to say. We will pray together. We will remember who saves. And together, we will trust in the name of the Lord our God. Because whatever happens next, the battle was never ours to control because it is the Lord who saves.